Episode of Fratello on Air. I'm Mike Stockton, coming to you from a very, very rainy and windy London, England.
Ha ha ha. And I'm Balazs Renzi, coming to you from a kind of gloomy, cold-ish, but dry Germany.
There you go.
Yeah, for the time being at least. But it's getting cold again, you know?
Yeah.
I was biking to work like last week. It was like pretty 8, 9 Celsius, 10 maybe in the morning. Now it's like 3.
Yeah.
So
same here. I cut the lawn this weekend earlier this week. I had to. It was crazy. And cherry trees and everything are blooming around here. Mm-hmm. The lawn was so thick that I filled 3 like these huge bags that they pick up. Not for another 2 months, by the way.
You should have a compost and, you know, have some stuff for your plants.
I may just use it to fill in the foxholes in the back fence.
There you go.
So, recycling. But in any case, yeah, I was like, okay, here we are. I fertilized and then boom, the floor dropped out, like you said. And walking to the bus stop today with my daughter, it was raining sideways and my hand was freezing. Freezing.
You know, I don't want to, you know, we talk too much about the weather, hashtag to our friend in Hong Kong, but, or shout out, not hashtag, but actually what I wanted to say is I have a couple of gloves, like running gloves, you know, I have like Nikes and the North Face and that kind of stuff. I have yet to find a glove that is not too thick, but that's warm, that you can still use your hands while wearing them, you know?
Yep.
It's either like super thick and you feel like you're 6 again, going to school with a big puffy jacket in the winter. At least that's how I felt. Mm-hmm. Or they're good. You can use your zipper and whatever, but they're absolutely not warm. So, and I don't like leather gloves too much because, first of all, I'm not a hired killer from the 1980s D category movie. It's just not for me.
Yeah,
you know they always used to put it on like, in these 1980s like crime movies, but put the gloves on.
The
hired guns.
I like the, I use them basically all the time now, these North Face gloves with the E-tips. And
I have those, but they're too thin.
See, I find them pretty good. I mean, you're right. I mean, if it's severely cold, it's not good. But then again, I guess I'm running in them a lot. So
you get warm,
right?
Yeah.
And so
when I'm on the bike, so you know it's oftentimes my hands are like ice cold, but then I'm sweating, of course.
Yep.
Well, anyways. Yeah.
Tough. So yeah. Today
I'll think of you, by the way, when I'm in Miami. I know you're gonna go anyways in a couple of weeks or whatever, but
yeah.
It's about 30 now, they're 28 to 30. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Oh god.
And not much humidity, by the way, so that's good.
Oh, that was awful 2 years ago.
At least this week, there isn't much. So today we're going to talk about, we're going to continue our series about what would make you buy a certain watch. And we're going to focus on a watch brand that neither of us own and have probably not spent a ton of time on, but Cartier.
Yeah.
And before we get to that, though, we've got a couple topics. We've got one non-watch related topic and then a semi-watch related topic or a watch related topic. We'll do the hangalinks and we'll get into it. So maybe you can introduce our non-watch related topic to kick things off.
Yeah. So one of the previous, I think the last episode, so from the 26th, whatever, so last week, there was a comment from Expedition 16610 in which he says, blah, 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 blah. I've been going down the aluminum luggage rabbit hole. Would love to hear some thoughts since I know you both are owners and if you ever had any irreparable damage. Thanks, guys. Keep it up.
Yeah.
So when it comes to aluminum luggage, the only brand that I have, and I think probably then you have, is Rimowa.
Yep.
There's a few others out there. I think Lufthansa have their own line now. They don't have the collaboration, or as far as I know, they don't have the collaboration with Rimowa anymore. Instead, they do their Rimowa ripoff Lufthansa aluminum luggage. There's Away. I think that they do a lot of good stuff.
They do.
I guess there's a few on Amazon. Like you can search for aluminum luggage on Amazon, and there's a bunch of other brands, like no name brands. So I guess I speak for the both of us when I say that the only luggage or the only brand we can comment on is Rimowa.
Mm-hmm.
And I only have the three. I think you have quite a lot, or you have had over the years, and maybe you talked about the issues with the salsa you had. Not salsa. What's the salsa? Isn't it the
polycarb? The salsa.
Yeah, you had some issues with those, I think. So maybe you should dive into that topic a bit deeper.
Yeah, I mean, we used the polycarbonates at first, and I have to say they've been pretty durable. But like, I had a really large piece that I don't think they even make that size anymore. And the problem with really large luggage, of course, is that you can really pack it and make it really heavy. And I found with that, like the side handle on the Rimowa, that was frequently used by myself or the baggage folks, you know, to like wing the bag onto the belt, and it started to tear around the area where the handle was affixed to the luggage. And I looked online, and there are some ways to kind of mend it. But it would require basically cutting the lining on the inside to get to it and patching it.
Can't you zip it? Don't you have a zipper?
Not on the inside. Because that lining is like glued on the sides. There's not like a zipper to remove the lining. Mm. So I never did any of those repairs. I mean, the luggage still works. We use it like in a pinch, like if we need something, you know, if we're taking like a bunch of clothes to somebody or something like that, and like don't really care.
But you don't travel with it anymore.
Yeah, not really. And anyhow, the lower size to that mega monster was like my kind of go-to for years. And it still is pretty good. My wife has the same one and started getting cracking in the corners. So that made us go to aluminum. And what I will tell anybody with aluminum luggage, and you can definitely vouch for this, is that you do have to get over the fact that, number one, it's more expensive than any plastic luggage. And number two, the second you buy it and use it and check it in for the first time, you can absolutely guarantee it's never going to look the same again. So, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to work. It's just, you know, aluminum scratches really easily. And
yeah,
like we talk about some other brands, I think the Away looks pretty functional.
I think it's the closest to the Rimowa design, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the Tumi is quite like ornate looking, mm-hmm. So it has like a lot of pattern design type stuff, and I think that really gets beat up. And it's also kind of the reason why I put stickers all over my large aluminum Rimowas. So
to protect.
Yeah, I mean, it also is just sort of adds to that weathered look. And some people like that. Some people don't. You see some people who just have like nothing. They have like a million of those like little rectangular scanning code things that they slap on
the luggage. The QR codes or the barcodes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've never had irreparable damage. I know I spoke about, like, I don't know, a couple years ago, how I got like a really acute dent right above one of the wheels on my workhorse piece, but it's never gotten worse. The thing still closes. I kind of admit, like, on one side up towards the top, it's pushed in a little bit. And I guess theoretically that yields a little less luggage space now, but it's just kind of character, and the thing I don't know, just keep soldiering on. And I think the only challenge I've had with that one is a little crack now in the side of one of the locks. So I've thought about maybe getting that replaced.
So I have the small one. I think it's the cabin, the MW, so the multi-wheel, right? That's why it's MW, yeah. The multi-wheel, so it has four wheels, whereas there's an option with two wheels, which I think is a bit thinner. So I have the multi-wheel cabin, and then I have the M size, which is practically brand new. And then I have the same M size in the Salsa, the black one, which is what I use. I use the black most of the time, and the small one, the aluminum. And they're perfect. The aluminum needs a bit of repair. I think I probably have to remove, change the wheels because they're a bit funky these days. But I've traveled with those, and I think you have as well, pretty much around the world, from Asia to the US, Europe, and everywhere in between. Yep. And I can second that. They're beautifully designed items, and they look perfect in the store, and you love them, and you know they're amazing on the shelf. But once you travel with them, they're going to obviously either lose the character or gain some more character, depending on which way you look at it. I as I said, I have the M aluminum, which is basically steel new, and I really don't want to use it. But of course, the reason I bought it is because I eventually have to. Actually, it was a good deal. And also because of your stories regarding the Salsa, I was like, if I ever want to replace the Salsa, it's probably best I have the aluminum. One thing that I think is worth mentioning is that the aluminum is heavier than the polycarb.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
So if you, I'm actually not sure about the weight, but I would say, I measured, I think my Salsa medium weighed as much as my small aluminum. So if there's a weight restriction, then you have to be sure that, you know, you either pay the extra or don't pack enough stuff or don't pack too heavy stuff into that.
Yeah.
Because, and the bigger one is even heavier, obviously. And I think the one that you had, the huge one, that must be really heavy on its own.
Yeah, the really big ones, and I have a trunk as well.
Like a trunk. Yeah, like a trunk.
Yeah, they're quite heavy. And I mean, okay, I've traveled a lot for work, so I've always had status, which means I get an extra weight allowance. So
right.
I've not had to worry about it, but it's a very, very valid point. And, you know, if you're kind of, I don't know, let's say older or whatever, like my parents pick up the aluminum ones, or my mom, and she's like, yeah, that's just like way too heavy on its own, right? Mm. And so you need to take that into account. What else?
I think we talked about this at least off air, that I'm just looking at the multi-wheel cabin, by the way. That's 4.3 kilos on its own, and it's a 35 liter bag, the one that I have, and I think also the one that you have. That according to some people in Cologne, where the removal factory is, if you bring your bag in, at least back in the day, they would service it and they would change like certain parts for free, because people just don't go there. So if you go like out of the city where the factory is, I heard a couple of stories where people would just drive by and stop and bring
these
in their suitcases.
Old-timers will
yeah, old-timers, yeah. Exactly. I don't know if that's still the case. I mean, mine is the old one where you still have this hook. The Remova logo is like a, you know, like a, you can unhook the logo and it becomes basically like a bag holder.
Yeah,
I think the new one doesn't have that anymore.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's kind of a nice feature, honestly.
Yeah, I saw it. I remember seeing Thomas Vankau of all people using it once. And I was like, wow, this is cool. Let me see if I have one. And mine also had it. As I said, back in the day, I think the new ones are just like a riveted logo.
Yeah.
And that's it. Is yours the new one or the old one?
My cabin one has that, and all my plastic ones have it, but the big aluminums don't. So they're newer. Yeah.
So my plastic doesn't have it anymore. It doesn't have it. Only the small one, even the medium aluminum doesn't have it. But I think we should. Oh, we're talking too much non-watch related stuff, so we have to stop the topic. Just one final note. Gear Patrol has a great article on these. It says the best aluminum suitcases for every trip, And they basically list everything from away to the remover carry-on we just talked about to Monos Hybrid, never heard of it, Sterling Pacific, and everything else in between. So if you guys are interested, go on Gear Patrol. This article is from, I don't know if there's a date. Yeah, it's October 2023, so last year, end of last year. And there's a bunch of useful info there.
Maybe two other very brief comments, yeah? Number one, with the aluminum, I've never, ever had a glass bottle break inside. I did have a bottle break inside one of my medium salsas, and only once, but once was enough. And I used wine skins, like padded sleeves, to put my wine bottles in. So, but the aluminum, I mean, it's virtually impossible. And the second one, somebody had commented a long time ago, who I think still listens, about the luggage company Briggs & Riley. And that's an American brand, pretty high end. And I will say, I don't know if they're doing aluminum now, but their warranty, and I know people who traveled exclusively with that stuff, is ridiculous. Like, you could run it over with a car and they'll replace it. So they're kind of no questions asked if you're that kind of, if you have that kind of concern, because I've heard Remova's gotten better again, but they went through a period of being kind of crappy after they got taken over by LVMH.
Yeah, they did a lot of fashion stuff with Off-White and all that stuff, which I mean, it's fun, right? But it's, it's one of those brands that I think was just a very good functional German brand. It was kind of, if you know, you know.
Yep.
And now they're just super trendy, and from LeBron James to, I don't know who else, everybody's
toting
using it and keep betting sponsored. I'm not even sure what's the story behind that, but there's a lot of celebrities now where I'm using Remova. And of course they do the watch cases and the little backpack for your cabin or your carry-on, which I posted I think last week. I'm still waiting you to send me one as a gift. Yeah, because I think it's really amazing.
So the next topic,
I liked how you swirled out of that gift.
Yeah. is watch related, but so I had a friend the other day ask me about if I'd seen this series of movies, which I hadn't really even heard of them, because I think they're made for TV movies that are apparently now on Amazon Prime, at least in the United States. But they are the Jesse Stone series of movies starring Tom Selleck, and for made for TV movies, apparently my friend says they're pretty good and pretty watchable. But he's a robbery homicide detective for a small town in Massachusetts, and in any case, he's got a past, you know, kind of a drinker, went through a bad divorce and all that kind of stuff. And in any case, my friend remarked that Tom Selleck in the show is sporting his signature Pepsi GMT Master.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, I found an article on this from some years ago that talked about it. And basically, it is the same watch that he wore in Magnum. So I know it's been reported that, yeah, that's his watch and he loves that watch. I found it interesting that he's still rocking that thing. And, you know, my buddy proposed the question. He said, so what about Tom Selleck's GMT Master if it went up to auction? What would that fetch? And
that's a great question.
He was like, I bet you'd go for $1 million at least. And I was like, you know, for whatever reason, I don't think so. But then again, $1 million isn't a lot of money today. And B, it is a pretty famous watch, isn't it?
I mean, yes, it is. I told this many times when I was a kid. I was a huge Magnum PI fan, and obviously our fellow podcast host Matt from Spirit of Time podcast is
West Coast Goulash Crew.
God, the WCGC. yeah, so he's He's also, I don't know about Greg, but definitely Matt is into Magnum PI as well. So for me, the reason I bought my GMT, my 1675, is because of Magnum. So obviously, if I had the means, and if this watch ever went up for auction, I'd love to bid on it. But then I think the question, as always, is there any proof that that is the same exact watch, other than a handwritten letter by Tom Selleck, or God forbid he passes away, you know, by whoever manages his estate. If it's the real deal, yeah, sure. But I know he wore some other watches or other GMTs over the years.
Yep.
So it's it would be hard to tell. And, you know, I mean, if you're Magnum PI fan, you know that they used a bunch of different cars, for example, over the seasons. It was a 308, right? The Ferrari 308. But then they used a couple of versions. Same with the dogs. Obviously, they cannot use the same two dogs. But they used a bunch of dogs over the years. So who knows how many watches the prop department went through.
Yeah.
Because he jumped out of helicopters. You know, he was swimming. He was getting blown up and this and that. So, I mean, that watch is my watch, I must admit, is pretty bulletproof. But I'm not a TV show detective, so.
Yeah, I mean, this article from Rolex Magazine, I'll put a link in the article. But I mean, he's gone through a lot of different Rolexes, two-tone Datejusts, and different GMTs, like you said. But it seems like when he shifts to like detective type roles, he throws the GMT on.
I think what came to my mind is, when it comes to movies, it's always a different story, right? Because a movie you shoot for, like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months, depending on the film. Mm-hmm. Whereas with a TV show, it's years and years and years.
Yep.
So when you wear a watch, you know, for example, the Monaco that Steve McQueen wore in Le Mans, that's, and we also know that wasn't one watch or six watches, as far as I remember. But that was the shoot. And that was a very long shoot, right? Because you know the story, if not watch the documentary about Le Mans. But then it was over. The GMT without the bezel from Apocalypse Now, again, they shot it for God knows how many weeks, and then it was over. And then the watch, you know, can be placed in a box. When it comes to a TV show like that, which I think was, I don't know, like 8, 9, 10 seasons.
Yeah,
which means at least, right? 8, 9, 10 years. Mm. Yep. Yeah, it's not the strongest story as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe you keep wearing the same one, or maybe you change, right?
Maybe.
I don't know, but
yeah.
Never know. Like, Tom Selleck could have been, you know, maybe part of his character was being kind of a curmudgeon who kept his habits. You know,
could be. Yeah, could be.
But, yeah, anyhow, I sent you a link, and like I said, I'll put it in the show notes, and it's an interesting article that just shows all the different Rolex watches that Tom Selleck wore, and obviously focuses heavily on the GMT. So,
yeah.
Yes. So with that, we will now shift to the Handgelenk Controller, and am I up or are you up this time?
You can go first.
Okay. So I'm wearing a watch that is kind of appropriate to our Cartier subject today, only in shape, but I'm wearing a, what I guess is a, let's call it a 1940s Bulova Arnold, which is a tonneau tank type, or tonneau, elongated tonneau shaped watch that is 20 odd millimeters by, I think, 35 or 36 millimeters lug to lug. And it is a gold plated or filled case with a stainless back. It has applied Breguet numerals. And this is one of two watches that I received or picked out during high school when I was dating someone who had a relative, and that relative had a brother who owned a jewelry store back in the 40s up in New Jersey. And when they closed the store, he had a bunch of watches that never, you know, hadn't sold, and the grandmother had these like as part of his estate. And anyhow,
if only you knew watches back then, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing too crazy. They were all this style. I think probably from a name recognition perspective, the Gruen Curvexes that were in there, I should have picked. But in any case, all new old stock. I still have the little hang tag for it with the serial number and the model number and the Arnold name on it. And still has its original strap, which, funny enough, looks very much like the kind of strap you would try to order for it today. So I'm going to guess it's pigskin, and it's kind of like a medium tan with stitching, box stitching, and it's just like a little time capsule. And I would say with watches like this sort of coming back into favor, it doesn't look as ridiculous on my wrist as it probably did 4 or 5 years ago. So, I thought I would break that out today because it, again, is a little bit reflective of some of the watches I guess we'll talk about here.
Well, not only that, but you're on this
kick.
On this kick, yeah, you have some of those. We talked, I think last episode, we talked about this, all the watches, the rectangular or square, I guess they're more rectangular than square, watches that you bought the past few months or years. It is a very fitting watch to our topic, to Cartier today. Sadly, I cannot say that mine is, but because I'm traveling tomorrow, I'm already, you know, packing and
in the mode.
Yeah. So, and you know, what's my G-Shot. Travel watch? There you go. My one and only G-Shock, the same G-Shock that G-Shock 2, AKA Gerard, has, and amongst a couple of other G-Shocks that he owns.
Which model is it again?
He modded. So both of us have the GWB5600, which is the Bluetooth version with an inverted display. And G2's modification was that he basically re-inverted the display into the original. Not the original, but how regular G-Shocks look. So it's a quasi light background and black or dark numerals, whereas this one is black background, and as I said, it's inverted, so the numerals are white or light.
Nice.
Gerard, I think, wrote an article about how he did the modding, removed the film and put another one on top of it, etc. So yeah, this is the watch that, as I said many, many times, what I travel with, because it's light, it's relatively cheap. You can connect it to the phone, and as soon as you change a time zone, the phone changes time zone, and when you connect it, the watch changes the time zone, so you don't need to worry about it. I'm going to bring some GMTs with me. I'll bring a few watches, as always, probably more than a few this time. And I have some GMTs, but, you know, taking it off at the airport, throwing it in the tray on security, picking it up, putting it in the pocket of the seat and this and that. I don't like to have the watch on while I'm flying because, you know, you
bang it in the stuff.
Yeah, and also you get swollen sometimes because of the pressure and whatever. So it's just not comfortable. So the first thing I do when I get on a plane is I take off everything. Really, I just my pants on, my shirt, the hoodie, and that's it.
Don't take off everything.
No, not on
the news, buddy.
But what I mean is like no bracelets, no watches, no nothing.
Yeah.
Pinky ring?
Do you leave that on? Pinky ring?
Yeah, I do. The platinum
ring
one
worth about 50.
The platinum one with the big pink diamond, the one that you and I both have. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Because twinning is winning. Yeah. So, yeah, G-Shock for me and for the next day. And maybe from Sunday on, I'm going to wear something else. But hopefully we can record next week and I can tell you what I'm wearing while I'm there.
Nice. Yeah, the I wrote up, I think it was last week, these same models, but for the Darwin Foundation. So they came out with three different models, and it's, I have to say, the reference to animals on these models is fairly subtle. So there's one with like a hammerhead motif around the display. One is and that's black. Then there's another one that's a yellow one with tortoises. And then the other black one has the finch, the bird. And they were like, I want to say like 120, 130 bucks or pounds or something. And yeah, it got a positive response from people, I'd say.
As nothing wrong with these.
Yeah, nice watches, really.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, that's what's on the wrist today, and as I said, probably tomorrow as well.
Yeah. So, shifting to our main topic, and this is kind of this is going to be, let's say, virgin ground for us, because Cartier is not a brand that we've spoken much about here, other than I think when the hype machine was in full effect around Cartier a few years ago, and it sort of felt like they were planning to make more of an entrance on the scene in the minds of collectors. We may have talked about how, yeah, it felt a little forced, and yet, the brand has endured, and they're easily one of the most popular out there. And the vintage market continues to do pretty well in a market that I would say is kind of quiet overall. And the new market gets pretty good coverage. You go into a Cartier boutique and, you know, forget the fact that there's usually still some sort of a queue or reservation system. Some watches are pretty tough to source still. But neither you nor I own one. And, you know, you're a person who's owned and owns Rolex watches. You've, you know, Omegas and other high-end brands. And maybe I'll ask you a question. Why have you never owned a Cartier?
See, this is a good question, because I think that when it comes to Richemont brands, yes, there are others, Vacheron Constantin, IWC, etc. But Cartier is the one that stands out the most for me, not necessarily only because of the watches, but probably also because of the jewelry, although I don't have any Cartier jewelry because I'm not really a bracelet or a ring, other than the pinky, as we just mentioned, a guy. But I really do like the style and the history, and also what basically Cartier represents. It's just, and there are some models that I really, really like the Ballon Bleu, for example, which is not your typical Cartier. Maybe that's why I like it. Or the Bache Coulante, which a friend of mine has, and I tried it on, and it really looks good on me because it's a relatively big watch. So I cannot really answer your question. It's just something else always, you know,
comes first.
Kind of skipped the line and jumped on the first position and pushed the others down. So Cartier is now on place four. Now it's on place five, six, seven. Maybe that's the reason. I think it's also Cartier. Usually when I think of a tank or something that's like a super elegant watch, and unless you dress elegantly, in my opinion, it doesn't look good. You know, like a tank with a t-shirt is not really that something you should wear. But then again, of course, I have other watches to wear with a t-shirt. Yet I still think that if you spend a significant amount of money in Cartier, if you buy a mechanical, it's not a cheap watch. You want it to be as versatile as possible. So maybe that's why. Yeah, I guess that's the reason, or these are the reasons, that it's just too elegant and I'm not there with my style to have a watch like that, like a Ballon Bleu or like a Bache Coulante. But really, lately I've been really, really thinking about trying to get a Bache Coulante, because I for those of you who don't know, that's the one which is basically the reversal of Cartier, where you can flip the watch. There's like the frame kind of opens up and you can flip the watch inside the frame and click it back on.
Kind of make it into like a little desk clock, honestly.
You could also make it, a really small desk clock.
Or on the nightstand when you're sleeping or something. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to think about it, I was thinking about it and why I've never gone down that road, because I've certainly, you know, both of us have spent the kind of money on watches that would have allowed us to afford a Cartier instead. It's really not until somewhat recently that the prices, at least for the more desirable models, started to really escalate, right? And I think it's a lot like what you said. You know, when I think about the use case for a watch, or traditionally what I think about those watches, which, by the way, if we go back historically, you know, the Tank was meant to be a robust watch that was kind of a sports watch, right, in the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay, people weren't wearing jeans and a t-shirt back then, you know, even casually they were more dressed than...
Or maybe the Santos was more of a sports watch, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. But still, even there, I find it more elegant and, you know, yeah, Roman numerals and things like that. It's just not my... hasn't been my normal aesthetic, but lately, you know, dipping into these non-round shaped watches and wearing, you know, for example, my Movado Curva Plan with a pair of jeans and a t-shirt, I can kind of get my head around wearing something like that with more casual clothing, although I would probably shake up the strap a little bit, you know, not have like some glossy black dress watch strap. But I'm like you. I tend to think that, something else jumps in front. But you like the Basculante, which I like it too. I remember seeing it when it was brand new and going to the shop with my dad and them taking it out. And it was really a beautifully made and finished mechanical object. Expensive, obviously. So... And he felt the same way, because he was kind of looking at reversos and he never went down the path with either. I think and then I look at watches like the Tank American or the Cintre, like the elongated ones, and I like those pieces a lot. Where I sometimes struggle, and not to take a tangent here, but to help bone up for this discussion, I did read our dear friend who sadly passed away, George Kramer's articles, the Shut Up and Read About Cartier series. The reality is, like, the movement department, and I don't want to be a movement snob, is a bit lacking on these more traditional models, at least if you go back in time. So in some cases, like Tank Normals used ETA movements, which are fine. In other cases, they use things like Piaget or JLC movements, which is pretty cool. But I then kind of look at the price that some of these things are fetching now, and they're not cheap. And I wonder, would I be better off buying like a Patek Gondolo for less money, you know, with a proper in-house movement? It's a Patek, so the quality of everything is going to be fantastic. So yeah, I think there are a number of these competing forces that have led me to not buying one yet.
Hmm. Yeah, I actually wanted to mention George's, not only the articles, but actually what he represented to the brand and to the collectors and fans around the world for Cartier. He was really exceptional scholar of the brand from a collector's perspective, but beyond that as well. He was also a very
friendly resource too.
Yeah, very, and a great guy, always super elegant, and with all those Cartier jewelry, you know, other than the watches, the tie pins and the cufflinks and the bracelets and this and that, and the lapel pins and whatnot. So it was always a delight to see him. I remember I was at one of the Cartier presentations at SIHH back then with him. And it was, I think, RJ, probably G2 was also there, and me. And he came and he came in with us. But so the presentations are usually, for those of you who don't know, it's like a group presentation. So you have, I don't know, pretty much all the media from that market, in this case, the Benelux market. So it was about, let's say, 20 people, and we all were waiting to go in, and he came in and he was waiting with us. He was talking to us. Of course, he was somebody who, I wouldn't say he was a regular contributor to Fratello, but he did write quite a lot of articles. So he was kind of standing with us. And then we walked in, and as soon as we walked in, we were like, we were separated from him because he was treated like
VIP,
like,
baby,
like royalty. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And then after the presentation, he stayed and, you know, had a bit of a chat with the people. So it's super sad that he's not with us anymore, but, his legacy lives through, our like talks like this and the brand itself. So,
yeah, it's impossible for me not to think about him when I think about Cartier. Every time I'm in London and I walk by one of their boutiques, I think about him. It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. He is Mr. Cartier, and he had a lot of interest beyond that. Like he had haute-lingerie pieces. He had a bunch of those watches. Of course, he was into music for obvious reasons. That was part of his profession back in the day. Almost once a year, he visited Budapest, and he would always message me. How he loved the city, and he was at this place and that coffee shop, and every year, really every year. So I have those messages still in my phone. And
very thoughtful guy.
Yeah. Sad that he's not with us. But let's celebrate his memory with, as I said, with talks and episodes like this. About the brand he loved so much.
So what would make you buy a Cartier then?
Honestly, amongst other things, this, like the I guess the connection we had to George, you know, because that's important. We talked about this numerous times, Mike, you and I, on air and obviously privately, how this is not only just a bunch of people, this is really a community, and people help each other out, not only with watches. We can literally not travel to a city where there is no listener from Fratello on Air who message us and say, hey, I heard you guys are coming, or you're coming. If there's anything, or if you want to meet up for a coffee, let me know. I told you guys last year when I was in Salt Lake City, of all places, I got a couple messages then. And of course, when I'm in New York or Miami or whatever. So I think this is a big part of me choosing one is obviously not only George, but it's just that, you know, you're connected to this community through this person, and now you connected it through the watch. And it might sound a bit romantic, I don't know, or, you know, not a tangible.
Sentimental, perhaps.
A bit, but maybe. Yeah, okay. Yeah, not really, you know, why you connected to the brand because of the friendships and stuff. But it is part of it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, our connection to Fratello also came through Omega, amongst other things. You and I, vintage chronographs, so many. So that's number one. And the connection is there. Through George and through Fratello. Nacho has a Cartier. He wears that quite often. So I'm sure G2 has about 15 new old stock pieces somewhere in the attic.
He just wrote today about his Solar Beat, by the way.
There you go.
Yeah, so funny enough.
So that's number one. Number two is I think it's... I never liked those... And I think I'm also guilty of using these expressions. You really have to have one of these in your collection, you know?
Yeah.
I guess I've used this in the past as well. And I don't think a Cartier is really something that you need to have in your collection. But once you pass the ones that you absolutely have to have in your collection, that's the next step. Simply because, as I said, it's a bit too elegant. So it's not as versatile as a Speedy or a Saab or a El Primero or whatever. So that's number two. You don't need to have a genuine love for everything that the brand does. I think you can just love one model. And I do love the Basculante or Basculante, whatever you want to call it, and the Ballon Bleu. Probably the Basculante more than the Ballon Bleu. So that's another thing. Like, I really do like that specific model. I guess you have brands like that, right? When you like, you're not really a fan of the brand as a whole, but there's like one special model that you always wanted to have. I'm sure you have brands like that. So, for example, that's also a reason. And possibly it's also age. You know, when you're a bit, I guess, getting older, your style is changing. You're not so much of a cargo shorts and flip flops kind of guy, unless you're Matt. Again, in California, because all we see him is in Hawaiian shirts and cargo shorts.
Won't kid you, us Californians and Floridians do have that in common. We are content to live like that. So
there you go. And I guess a Cartier doesn't look good with cargo shorts. But then again, when you dress up, this is something that is a super nice touch to have a nice suit on with a Cartier watch. So I guess that's a combination of that all of these things. That would be. What's yours? Or what are your reasons?
I think number one, it really is this sort of newly found interest or refound interest in non-round watches, because I don't really care for the round Cartier watches. So like the Ballon Bleu, I can appreciate that watch, and I think it kind of came into my mind a couple of years ago when I started watching The Morning Show on Apple, because mm-hmm. Billy Crudup's character wears I want to say it's like a mid-size version. It's really small, and it's very distinctive watch. And I think it's beautifully designed. I don't really like Cartier on a bracelet for whatever reason. So I like the Tank watches, the different ones. The Santos is fine for me, but I don't know. I really like the Tanks, and I don't know if the Louis Cartier version or the Tank American or the Cintre would be my choice, or a vintage Normal, but no matter what I would choose, it would have to be manual wind. And I'm not even that fussed at this point over whether it would need to be, you know, a white metal or, you know, yellow or rose gold, but I'm kind of tempted. I kind of am. And I think what I will do at some point in the next weeks or whatever is when I'm in the city, I think I'll try to go and try some stuff on and just see what fits, if they've got it in stock, obviously. I did reach out to Eric recently and said, hey, what should I be looking at in terms of vintage models? Just something to get an idea of. I tried on last time I was down there a Tank Normal from the 70s. So this was a small watch, but was a man's watch, and I guess really a unisex watch. But this was like the little more square, chunky sides, and really a neat case, but man, it was so small. It was really small. And it was expensive. I mean, he said, yeah, because the prices on these have gone nuts. They used to be $7,000. Now they're 20 or something crazy, you know, and they use like an ETA movement. And again, nothing really wrong with that, but I would struggle to lay that down versus other watches. So, but if you take a look at, I think this is an absolutely stunning watch. I'll send you the link, but it's the Tank Cintre in rose gold with a black dial and a manual wind movement. Mm-hmm. I find this watch stunning. I find it absolutely stunning. And I'm tempted, to look for something like this. The other piece that I really enjoy, and again, we'll put links to some of these different watches, but the the Tank Americon in platinum with a manual wind movement. And this is from like 1995. And for whatever reason, these don't quite have the love. I mean, they're not cheap at like 17,000 pounds, but for a platinum watch, I don't know, I would have expected a higher number on a brand like Cartier, especially for a big watch, like a 45, 46 lug to lug. So yeah, but you know, here again, that's a lot of money. And to your point, I think I'd really have to assess whether, you know, if I were picking a nice watch to wear, would I pick that or would I pick a Calatrava, for example, to take out that day?
Yeah, that's a good point, right? Because you really have to be, I guess, a super fan of the brand to go with that one versus a Calatrava. Because if that's the same amount of money, I have to say I'm probably going with the Calatrava.
Yeah.
But then it's also, I guess, a matter of taste. As I said, if you're connected to the brand or not. I like the Tank American as well. Yet I still think that this is, again, a watch that I would... So all the nice and expensive and luxury watches that I own, this is probably the one that I would wear. Least. Maybe, yeah, dress, yeah, maybe a few times a year.
Yeah, and like I say,
and then I wonder if it's if it's worth the money.
Yeah, and like I say, I'm not even talking about whether, you know, if you had the two lined up to buy. I'm even talking about if you had the two sitting in your watch box at home, which would you choose to wear, right?
Mm.
You know, on those days that, yeah, I guess, you know, the fact that they're not everyday watches, the few days that you wear something or feel like it works with whatever you're wearing, what are you going to choose? Is it going to be the Cartier or the Patek or, you know, whatever the
Do you need multiple of the same style or type of watch is basically the question. Like if you have a dress watch, you have a Patek, which is a 10-20,000 euro Patek. Do you need another one of those to wear when you could wear the Patek or you don't?
Yeah.
Or are you going to use the money and buy something else or just save it or whatever?
Yeah. And I think if I go back historically speaking, and I think I've really gotten over that, but I remember, you know, my dad talking about Cartier when we were kids and he never went and bought one, but you know, they were of course in South Florida quite popular. For whatever reason, I always kind of discounted them a little bit more as very high-end jewelry watches instead of being watches,
which first. They were, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe still are, actually.
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously tried to put some real effort into making themselves seen as more of a watchmaker. But I still think that depending on who you talk to, that reputation of being a jewelry watch may still be there first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, but they do sell, as I said, a lot of jewelry. They sell more jewelry than watches, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess maybe that's also the reason that people still... I mean, there's only a handful of brands. You have Cartier, right? You have Tiffany. You have maybe Harry Winston, Van Cleef & Arpels. So like a few brands. Not Bulgari, obviously. But look at Bulgari. They managed to kind of expand, right? From the jewelry brand into a watch brand as well, and they're doing a good job. But still, if you look at, you know, the jewelry side of Bulgari, it's still huge.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's still bigger than the watch department.
Yeah, I would think so. And of course, the price of their jewelry very quickly gets to a level that's far in excess of their watches, right?
Yeah.
And same with Cartier probably. So, yeah. And so what model would you focus on? You mentioned the Ballon Bleu. Is that the one for you?
Or the Basculante, probably that one before the Ballon Bleu. Mm-hmm. That would be my choice because I like the fact that there's some kind of, you know, some fun, with that watch. I like, as I said, I like the Tank American, and I like some of the, I'm not really the biggest Santos fan, I must admit. Probably the Basculante is the one that is the most Cartier to me while being fun and kind of different. Mm-hmm. Of course you have the crashes and stuff. I mean, it's the prices are just silly, and you know, if that's your thing, go for it. But I would not spend that much money on a watch like that. But yeah, I guess it's that would be my choice.
Yeah.
And the manual wind in the bigger case, you know, because you have quartz versions with date, you have the non with date, you have the smaller version, the larger version. I would go with the big one with the without the date, I'm sorry, and with the manual wind movement. That's and I'm not really a gold Cartier guy, so I would mm-hmm. go like steel, okay. White gold or steel. And I think in the Basculante, I don't think there's a white gold model, so you have to go steel.
Platinum with platinum.
Well, if they do a platinum one, I'm not sure if they do. But yeah, I mean something, you know, with like a silverish color, platinum, yeah. White gold, steel, on a nice green, thin, tapered Saffiano leather strap. There you go. That would be my choice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because unlike with other brands that we've spoken about, I don't really have a problem with their lineup in terms of, you know, with Seiko and Rolex, I think we talked about things that we want to see. I actually don't have any real issue with what they're making in terms of, oh, I wish it were thinner or I wish it were this or that. No, I don't. And I actually like the fact that, especially in the Tank area, they do offer a pretty nice selection of manual wind watches. So, you know, they're making pieces that appeal to all kinds of buyers, I think. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't really have a wish for them. It's interesting. I probably check out their site, you know, every month or so. And, you know, I always go to
You are
Tank.
A fan.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of intrigued. And what is intriguing, and maybe it's because we're coming up to Watches and Wonders, but just recently I looked in the manual wind tanks. That's what I filter on. They've got actually one of the more, straightforward watch websites. I mean, I think you and I would both agree some watch websites are terrible and awful to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
Longines. And this one is actually really good. So I do that. And now some of these really interesting tanks have disappeared from the site that had Art Deco dials and have been replaced, I think, by these solid dial manual wind pieces, like with the black lacquer dial, like a blue one, a green one. So I'm very curious if I go into a boutique, if there'll be some things there that are no longer on the website or if they're just gone.
You get a nice discount, you think?
No, I don't think so.
Probably not. Yeah, probably not.
Although, that being said, here in London, there are some, and I'm sure probably in most cities, there are some ADs that are multi-branded ADs who carry Cartier. And I have seen some pieces on sale, not Tanks normally, but like Pashas and some other pieces like in the discount window. So
yeah, my experience is that the stuff that, you know, it's very rare that the stuff that is discounted is the stuff that you want.
Yeah.
It's either, oh, I want this one, but that's not in discount, or we have a bunch of models, but obviously those are models that people usually don't buy. And knowing my taste, I'm usually liking the stuff that people would buy. So that's not much of a help, but yeah.
No, I don't think they really have too much of an issue or would be discounting a manual wind tank, right? So that doesn't strike me as something that they would need to do. But I enjoy looking at these. They're neat watches. I just don't have, I haven't gone over the edge yet to take the plunge, but it could happen here. I don't think you'll ever see me buy a quartz or solar version.
Yeah. You're not G2 after all.
Yeah. So it was crazy. I was reading Gerard's article this morning, and you know, when those solar watches came out, and I still think they're kind of neat, they were a little over 2,000 euros, which I think at the time, there were a lot of people who had never really given Cartier a look who said, wow, that's pretty neat. And they, of course, were really hard to get for the first year or two. And now price is like 3,800 euros. So they've gone up 75% in the space of like a few years. Mm. So that's a lot of money. It's the exact same price as the quartz, by the way. So they give you a choice of either.
Well, and solar is technically quartz as well. So
yeah. Yeah. But
you either use it, the one with the battery or with the sun. But at the end of the day, you're not getting a mechanical watch.
No.
So the price should be the same. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's an interesting note though, that they're the same price. And yeah, I.
But you would not go vintage. You would go new, or
I would probably consider vintage, like the Platinum American that I sent to you. I think is from 95, which isn't vintage, but geez, scary to think that's 30 years old. I would consider something like that. The older vintage stuff. So this is the other thing with Cartier. There are. I've seen some pieces that have gone for pretty big money that have had just rotten dials. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And of course these watches were not overly water resistant. And then there are pieces that are stated as basically redialed. And here again, you've got certain, as you like to call them, tastemakers who, you know, like to comment that, oh, redialing a Cartier is acceptable and all this stuff. Yeah, I don't buy that. I'm not going down that path. I want it either original or I don't want it. So I would consider it, but here again, I would only work with somebody I trust. I've seen original or purportedly original Cartier dials that to me look like crap. So I have no clue if they're real or not, you know, and if it's real, I don't know if I really want that on my wrist. It looks like a child made the dial sometimes. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, with that, that's always the case, right? But you see a lot of that stuff from Patek and Vacheron as well, where they really, the dials or the quality was just not better than any other brand. You can see that it's flaking or the edges are kind of peeling off. Especially if the watch had a press-in case back or had like water damage or just damp got into the case, you can immediately see that on the dial. So obviously back then, sometimes we're complaining about Omega and this and that. I mean, the Cartier or Patek or Vacheron, as I said, they were not much better either.
Yeah, yeah. And Cartier has typically had, you know, flat dials, right? So there weren't really any, it's just, for lack of a better term, it looked printed, right? So it's, to me, it's tough to tell. And
yeah,
then you get into the whole New York, London, Paris situation and I'm lost. I mean, that's probably actually a brand where I would buy a relatively expensive book, kind of like a Moonwatch only thing, to learn more about the differences and the variants and things like that. I think it would be somewhat fascinating because then you really are kind of touching on, well, we said jewelry, and you get into a lot of bespoke and ordered pieces, right? So you can imagine over the years, somebody goes in and wants some custom diamond brooch. I'm sure they did the same with watches, and they still do, right? They do these private collection pieces.
Yeah.
So kind of fascinating. Maybe I should roll into Cartier of London and pretend I'm a high roller and see what they'll design for me.
Well, next time I'm in London, we're going to go Cartier shopping, at least window shopping. And we see if we can find something nice, new and or vintage.
Pinky rings again? Definitely.
No. Well, I wanted to say something, but, you know, I would have had to edit it out afterwards. So I'm not going to say it. But you know what ring?
Okay. Oh, goodness.
Yes. Let's stop this now before we get into
trouble.
That. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if 2024 will be the year I purchase a Cartier. I doubt it.
But never say never.
You never know. You never know, right?
Never say never.
Yeah.
Maybe something comes up. Maybe a vintage model that you've never, you know, heard of or seen that existed pops up. And who knows? I'm also fairly sure that I'm not going to pull the trigger, as we used to say, on a Cartier this year. Maybe on something else, similar brand, I guess, class. Would you call that Cartier with Patek and Vacheron, similar class?
Okay.
You know, something like that, maybe. But probably not Cartier. But in any case, it's, as I said in the beginning, it's still an amazing brand with rich history, and we have a close connection to that as Fratelli. So
yeah,
it's worth talking about it and checking it out, and from time to time going to the boutique and try something on. And who knows?
Well, what I can tell you, if either of us buy a Cartier this year, what it won't be that terrible diver they came out with a number of years back. Remember that ugly thing?
Yeah. Yeah, what a Santos. What is that? The XL?
Yeah, it was really bad.
God, yeah. That's really the Cartier for people who want other people to know that they have a Cartier. Buy the biggest that the brand can offer. Maybe Ballon Bleu is also something like that. You could say that because it's also a fairly large watch. But it's so not a Cartier-looking watch. Well, let us know in the comments what you think. Well, you will do anyways.
Yeah, and be interesting to see who out there loves Cartier and who really doesn't. I think it does seem to be a polarizing brand in that regard.
Hmm.
So,
perfect way to end the episode.
With that, Balazs.
Yeah.
I guess I don't have that much more to say about Cartier, do you?
No, me either. I need to go pack my bags.
Yeah.
And
I will end here and just say Time for a Pint was
a really good time
the other night. There were no Cartiers that I saw there, although that doesn't mean that there weren't any. It was a really nice showing of people and watches, a couple really nice discussions on the 62 Moss, given by Samuel, who is, interestingly enough, the typographer for Thomas von Stratton, who is designing his VPC watch that he's going to come out with. So it was nice to meet him. He came up and introduced himself and knew that we were part of Fratello. And then Nikos gave a talk about Angelus and his Vernal, the medical, and kind of like the interesting story behind that variant of the Angelus medical. Is it called the medical, Balazs?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And he was,
You mean the Angelus Messina collaboration? That's what you're talking about?
Oh, he talked about that and how bad it was. That was interesting.
Of course it was. So, it's Messina. No. What did you expect?
Yeah, so that got a lot of heat in the room. Let's put it that way. And then, interestingly enough, Dan, so mm-hmm. Caliber 861, he showed me the lovely Omega that you helped him.
Nice, 2505, yes.
Yeah, Decipher, lovely watch, gorgeous nice. Watch. That nice. Dial is perfect. And then I believe he did some impressions of your voice, which were really good.
Who, Dan did?
Yeah.
Oh.
They were fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, he needs to send me a voice memo and
oh yeah,
show me. And according to you, the Angelus Air Force watch was also mentioned, I guess, in the lineup or history to the brand.
Yeah, he mentioned that. And
great stuff. I'm sad I missed that. I would have loved to see or hear that presentation. But hopefully the next one in May, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Is going to be equally interesting. I'll try to be there, as I said, many of times. And well, you know about this anyways, before anybody else. You messaged me and Lawrence messaged me and I said, you're too late, buddy. Mike beat you to it. I already, because you kind of sent the same picture. So would have loved to see that presentation, but yeah, next time, hopefully.
It was a good time. And the cool thing is, meeting more and more of our listeners at these events. So had a really friendly, young lady, Iman, come up, and she's pretty new to watches, kind of just getting into the journey, and listens to us. So warm welcome to her and to the whole watch world. So that was fun. And yeah, it's pretty good to see people are still getting into the hobby. And I'm kind of jealous because that beginning part is a lot of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, super exciting.
Yeah. So.
Well, you have to find fun in where we are, you know. Absolutely. This is also fun.
Absolutely. So with that, Balazs, I think Mike is out, and I wish you a wonderful trip to the Big Apple, and may your luggage survive.
Thank you. I'll get back to you guys. Hopefully you can get back to you next week while I'm in the States, depending on Mike's and my availability, but try to record one as well. And thanks again. If not, then I'll give you an update once I'm back, and Balazs is out as well.